You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, party people, welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. I am thrilled to have John Bauer here zooming in with us today. And John, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm originally from Minnesota. I have had the great fortune in my career to work for three of the, what I would call at the time, most successful, best retailers, perhaps in the world, Starbucks, TJX, and Target, as well as doing a few other things. I was the youngest child of seven with four sisters, which I think sort of over time has shaped my view of the world and of life. I grew up on a farm. I went back to college a little bit later in life and got my degree while I was working. And quite frankly, I feel not necessarily lucky, but really blessed at where I'm at in this place, at spot in life. So
fantastic. And those are some of my favorite retailers. Starbucks, Target, and TJX. Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I'm sure you have mountains of information to share with us. And you probably don't know, but I have six sisters and one brother.
Wow. Wow. Lots of.
Where are you in the ranks of your family?
I'll tell you what they called me. My next oldest siblings were twin sisters, 5 years older. And so I was the baby of the family. So the youngest.
Oh my goodness. Got it. I'm the second to youngest, so, but I grew up as a middle child because I've got half siblings, same dad, same mom, all that kind of stuff. I'd have to draw you an org chart for you to understand my family.
I understand lots of, my wife's family is very small, just two children, and the dynamics between this big, huge, at times dysfunctional family that I have and her very small, close-knit family are quite interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. We can totally relate. So today, what are you drinking? You said root beer. I've got my A&W.
Yeah, if it were a little later in the day, it might be a good Minnesota craft beer. But right now it is, it's actually a Sprecher's root beer that I first got turned on to. Their brewery is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, that is delicious. They have that on tap some places too.
They do. Right. So it's a good alternative at this time of the day.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to open mine up and pour it in my little fancy glass here. I've got my little polka dot glass because we're all about fun. Did you know, John, that A&W is the number one selling root beer in America?
I did not know that.
So. Yeah. And on August 6th, it's International Root Beer Float Day. So cheers.
Cheers, Renee. Really good to be here.
Awesome. So what can we celebrate for you this week?
Oh, what can we celebrate? My 11-year-old son, who is on a couple different baseball teams, he's a pretty good baseball player, but his teams haven't been very successful this year. Well, they're in playoffs now, and they've now made it to the semifinals tonight. So
fantastic.
They're cheers exceeding expectations. Go so team. His name is Jack, so good for him.
Go, Jack. All right, John, we're heading on a party bus. It's later in the day. We brought some cocktails with us. You can choose anyone who's famous and alive. Who is coming with us?
Wow. Famous and alive. That's a tough one. I would say... Oh my gosh, this one sort of surprised me, famous and alive. So I don't know if I want to be boring or sort of exciting, but I am going to be timely and I'm going to pick, if she could take some time off, it might be a week or two from now, but Sunisia Lee, the gymnast from St. Paul, who grew up literally three or four blocks from where I'm sitting right now, and who, after unfortunately Simone Biles couldn't continue to compete, last night took the pressure and really stepped up and helped her team and herself, and just as importantly, her country earn a silver medal. So that's who I would pick right now.
That is an incredible choice. She is incredible. And I love how, so there's two female gymnasts from Minnesota and a male gymnast from Minnesota. And I love how they show their families cheering them on after their performance. Oh my gosh, incredible. Yeah, I love watching the Olympics. I would probably pick Snoop Dogg because we would have a lot of fun with him.
Well, yes, you're a little bit more fun. I think I'm a bit more serious, but yes, that sounds like fun. That would be a good combination.
All right. So, John, walk us through your career journey. You told me one day when we were having a conversation that you were the guy walking down the street and you became a manager of supply chain at Target and you thought you had made it. And then you continued to be the chief supply chain officer. How do you get there? How do you inspire other people listening?
Yeah, I'm glad it's great that you remembered that because I'll never forget that day. And it was probably about 20 years ago. I had started at Target, 20 some years ago. My career path is not a straight line, but it is relatively ascending. But about 20 some years ago, my wife and I, we had moved. I started at Target on second shift as a supervisor and really enjoyed that. I had a really diverse team and it was a great way to get to know Target and Target distribution, and had moved to headquarters and got promoted to a manager role. And at that time, maybe I was a little naive. I don't know. It was like a kid growing up on a small farm that only one of the seven that ever graduated from college. And my wife and I are walking, and we're conservative by nature, and we're walking down the street. We looked at each other and said, and we were very happy. We said, wow, let's start planning our life for this. This is as high as we can go. This is kind of as good as we can get. And so the really good thing about that, and that's where I have such a great connection with her, is that we've sort of planned our life around that. We planned our finances around that. We planned the homes we lived in, and, quite literally 10, 11, 12 jobs later, that's still how we think, but it's taken us in many different places all throughout the world. So I give her a lot of credit because she's really been supportive of me over that time. At that time, she was actually kind of the breadwinner and I was just sort of starting out, and through time and with our son we've sort of switched those roles, but certainly a great partner. And if you ask me what I attribute it to, this might not be a great answer, but I'm not exactly sure, so I don't know, and we'll find that out maybe in the next 20 minutes or maybe in the next 10 years. But what I would tell you is the three jobs before that, in the whatever, 6 to 10 jobs after that, were always much more rewarding than whatever the destination was. And so, I give that as advice to younger people as they're just starting out, because everybody wants to get ahead. They want to go farther. They want to make more money. And I've had much more fun in the journey than I ever did in any destination. And I think that would be something that would pass on as we kind of go through this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always a marathon, not a sprint, right? And once you get to the destination, it's really the journey that there is no end destination. If there is, then we're not learning, we're not growing. I mean, as human beings, we're supposed to learn and grow and keep going, right? There is no end destination, but you've been wildly successful. How about politics? How do you navigate internal politics? Like, were there people that supported you along the way and kept you moving in your career, or were you in charge of your career? Tell us about how that kind of worked out.
Yeah, the word politics, especially today, is a little bit charged. So I like to use maybe the words a little bit more, and this is charged too, but maybe not in this context, is personal. And, if I look back at my career, some of the most fulfilling points really didn't have a lot to do with the job. It had more to do with not professional human connection, with a personal connection. Somebody getting married, helping someone through a divorce, et cetera, et cetera. So to try to answer your question, as I went through my career, I tried to make as many personal relationships as I could as I went through it. And in some cases, that personal relationship wasn't great, but we understood each other and knew how to, for lack of a better description, sort of utilize our strengths and weaknesses. In other cases, that individual may not have always helped me in my career, but was certainly a great sounding board who I trusted. And at the end of the day, they're still my friend. So what I gained through that process was much more than whatever the next role was. All that aside, you talked about sort of politics. I learned that. That was more of a learned trait, is perhaps how I communicated, how I took things, some things in stride and other things didn't give up on. Sort of what I'd call that, what we call it, emotional IQ, trying to really learn which things were more important. And I will be really candid, as a pitfall earlier in my career, I couldn't quite figure out why some people got ahead and maybe perhaps at times I didn't. I'm sure we all go through this. And most of those times, I thought I was smarter than that person. I worked harder than that person. So it was all politics. There was no other reason. And that is absolutely the wrong way to think about that. And much better, and this is what I've learned over time, was to learn. So that's very, very negative. But a positive approach is to learn what that person was doing right, was to connect with that person. And what I generally would find out is their personality traits were probably far different than mine. And they had skills and abilities to offer, say, the organization that I didn't. Even though they weren't quite as apparent, in my mind is what I thought. So they really, over time, I've got some sort of anecdotal stories that are sort of funny how I've learned from that throughout my career. So much so that, you know, quite a few years ago, there was a young lady and she and I just did not get along. Cats and dogs. I mean, we just couldn't figure it out. I'm sure she couldn't figure me out. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure her out. And you'd think I could with all these sisters. Maybe that made it worse, right?
Right.
Well, she was an amiable, social type person. You know, if you did her sort of Herman brain dominance or one of these analyses. And I'm a driving analytical. So you can only imagine the friction that caused. Well, we came up with a really good and simple system. I know it sounds simple, but it worked. When she came into my office, she had to get to the point. When I came into her office, I had to ask her how she was.
Oh, I love this.
And what I would tell you over time, my personality trait, the fundamental ones haven't changed. But how I act has. I am far, far, to a fault now, far, far much more apt and get much more satisfaction out of finding out about people's families before any kind of business problem. And I candidly and wholeheartedly believe that is absolutely an issue today, that in part of it's because of COVID and these virtual meetings. We just don't take that time to get to know somebody, as I said earlier, and started with personally, who that person is.
Exactly.
But she taught me, she helped me. She's somebody I remember to this day that taught me about that, even though she probably didn't know she was doing that.
Right. I love that. Because I know early in my career, especially at Target, I was driven all about, you know, making an impact and driving and forget personal. And I remember my boss at the time would always say, she's like, when are you going to have kids? I'm like, you probably shouldn't ask me that. But she's like, when are you going to have kids? And then I'm like, why is she asking me this? And then I finally had my first daughter, I think in 2000, let's see when she was born, 2009. And then I knew why she was saying that. Cause kids kind of mellow you out a little bit. And then you realize what's really important in life.
Yep.
And it wasn't driving and recruiting and getting all these projects done. It was really the broader sense of collaboration and people. And so, you know, anyway.
Yep. Really about perspective.
Totally. But I love that. So John, knowing that you have that knowledge now of connecting with people, learning more about them personally, how would you advise people to change that behavior in the workplace?
Yeah, so I'm kind of a firm believer in, yeah, there's this conservative part, discipline and repetition and exercise. And somebody once called me this, like a learned extrovert. I would say the only way to really attack, not the only way, there's plenty of much more scientific ways, but as an individual, continue to make those connections. And even if it means that it's sort of work for you, is continue to make those meaningful connections. And because the day is short, you have to decide, and you can be a little selfish with this. This connection may be around personal work-life balance. This connection may be around a specific problem to solve. And this connection may be around career advancement. And I think what you'll find as, and what, at least what I found is I went through that, and I honestly used to do Franklin planning all the time. I still keep them, but candidly, I don't use them. I would literally write in there, because I was driving analytical, talk to three people today. Say hello, give positive recognition to, you remember that from the Target days, give positive recognition to at least one person. And what I found over time is I created behavior strengths, and that idea of connecting with three different people about this problem or that my career turned into, that was a dialogue that all interconnected. And that's another thing I think sometimes, especially younger people don't always understand, is you can, your objectives in your career and your personal life and your family life can be interconnected. And that's sort of what I learned.
I love it. And I fully agree, because people always, what you see is what you get. I am the same at work as I am at home. If you see me on the street, if you see me at the bar having a beer, I am always the same Renee Fry. So I totally love that. And if you just take one little step and have a little reminder to give someone positive recognition, that repetition over time, of course, is going to lead to continued behavior. So I love that. So John, what advice can you give to individual contributors, specifically within supply chain, how to transition into a leadership role?
Yeah. It's kind of along the same string we're talking about, except, and I really found this. And so throughout my career, there was an organization I was in that was a little bit old, what I'll call older fashioned. I don't know how else to describe. That's probably not the right way to say it anymore. I don't know. It's kind of like when you're developing leadership skills and someone tells you, take this class, but that's all they tell you. So in this organization, it was about, as we were doing talent reviews, it was about, well, this individual contributor hasn't supervised anyone. So part of the answer was, well, let's move them into a role to supervise someone. That's okay, but it isn't in and of itself. Because if you do that, they're set up to fail, right?
Right.
A development plan that said, and now I'll answer your question finally, is, as an individual contributor, what activities in their job or slightly outside of their job can they conduct in order to develop leadership skills in addition to a class and to maybe getting some supervisory experience? So for instance, I had an entire team of engineers, and at times, and not in all time, I'm not an engineer, but I really respect driving analytical. I really respect the discipline. But quite often the engineer is always right. You know why? Because they are. They're engineers. They need to be right. Otherwise, they won't design my distribution center right. And how they articulate this problem and the solution isn't always that important. It isn't, because they're working inside of a building or in some sort of mechanical situation. So what I found is there's still plenty of opportunities in these roles, because as an engineer, you're always coming up against, let's say, third-party contractors or material handling vendors or third-party logistics companies. What a perfect opportunity example to hone communication skills, subtle leadership skills, moving teams to where you need them to be, all these different opportunities. So I think that was a big one for me as I started my career a little bit more individually. And I worked with a lot of trucking companies and third-party logistics companies and warehouse companies. And to this day, I say is how you manage those relationships are very similar. And the skills needed are very similar to leading a team.
Love it. I love that analogy. What's your best secret for retaining your employees?
Honestly, and I would say I've not always been the best at this, but what I'm finding through my life and I'm continuing to learn about it is just pure honesty and then honest communication. And at times throughout my career, I have a tendency to be too candid. So I have to sometimes hone that and approach it. I went through the recession as a senior leader in an organization, I had these different principles I sort of led myself and my team by. And one of them was trust through transparency. And I had changed that a little bit through the Great Recession because we didn't have time to always be so subtle. And so what I turned it into was trust through transparency and candor. I know in my personality now, I have to take that candor off a little bit and just really be, thoughtful about how I'm communicating the honesty. And what I've found is 85% of the time over the longer term, that honest communication will almost always work. It isn't always pleasant for either person. And I just think that is absolutely the most important thing.
Yeah, I love that. Trust through transparency. I love that. All right, let's talk COVID. So it has taken up supply chain industry. Have we ever experienced anything like this? Tell me, how have you had to pivot? How have companies had to pivot?
You're right. Since I guess the 19 teens, we have not seen anything like this. And as you might imagine, technology and the world has changed since then. I'm working in a consulting practice right now on a couple of different boards. What happened in COVID, there was a dynamic, in my opinion, that happened at first, aside from all the personal tragedy that my heart goes out to and just people's losing their jobs and that thing, sort of aside from that, but thinking it from a company and business perspective, the dynamics I had found is once people sort of got a little bit used to, if they could, doing more of what we're doing today is virtual Zooms, more telephone calls. The companies I've worked for were global in nature. So personally, I'm used to, I had teams all over the world having conference calls worldwide and having video conferences. But once people got used to that in the first few months of COVID, the connections that I had both personally and professionally with people were really great and enhanced. I would tell you if I was on a call, I'd see high level executives on calls about what perhaps before COVID were lower level problems. So it gave me really good, it was really felt good to see this kind of engagement because that's what I like. In my heart, I'm sort of an operator and I love that engagement. I always say no problem too small. What I would say, so that was a really good thing. It gave me a really good pause that we are now able to use technology to enhance communication.
Yep.
And I think in general, companies did a really fantastic job adjusting to that. I know, my former company and yours as well, Target, did in general a great job in how they treated their employees. And, the success was behind that. And it seems like they really appreciated how employees engaged. So now what's kind of the downside of it? Again, aside from all the personal great tragedy, those same calls were, which were highly engaged and many people involved, aren't the same anymore, in my opinion. Quite often, it's more difficult to get people to talk on the phone. It's more difficult to get a meeting with people. So I'm not exactly sure what happened through that tide. And hopefully, as offices open up and we get to more hybrid situations, we'll be able to maybe get a better balance between those two things.
Sure.
So that's kind of the personal side of personal professional side of COVID. From a supply chain side, and this I've been talking to a lot of my advisory partners, is in my view in supply chain, and I don't know how this will be heard, you know, with your audience, but COVID didn't really change anything at all. What it, especially in supply chain and especially in retail supply chain, what it did was two things. It accelerated every dynamic that was already happening for really 5 years prior. So it was the great COVID accelerator. And then the second thing it did is where organizations had supply chain problems, not opportunities, problems, it made them abundantly visible. And that's really all that COVID did in terms of an impact on supply chain.
Right. It just kind of turned the dial and put the spotlight on, right?
Exactly.
Got it. So how do you anticipate the effects of COVID on all the supply chain with the delays and all that stuff? Like, how long should we expect that to last?
Okay, that's the big kind of crystal ball genie question. So I have a theory that I've been working through, and that theory is based on, you know, this, my experience, 20, 25 plus years. It's also based on not having an event as impactful as COVID. And then it is based on lots of data and analysis that I've been looking at. But I believe the current logistics and supply chain, let's call it the logistics and supply chain market, will stay this dysfunctional. Because that's what it is. So we should call it what it is. That's maybe the candor.
Love it.
For at least 18 months.
Okay.
And so I'm thinking around Chinese Lunar New Year, 2023. And what that 18 months is a bit arbitrary, but that 18 months can either shorten or lengthen depending on events. And what I'm seeing in the industry is those events never curtail. So I think what's going to happen is, will the network be as complicated, as expensive, as much demand for 18 months? Probably not. That will level off. But I do believe that things like logistics pricing and capacity to some extent will not go back to 2019 levels. It will level off at a higher level. And through that 18 months, that whole idea of acceleration, although not as fast, and apparency, like making it very apparent where the problems are, will continue.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, for sure. So you've worked for some of the most recognizable, highly respected companies in the world. Is there a common theme that you see across companies when you're stepping in that every company kind of needs to work on, or anything you can note there?
It's really, really interesting, because I will say that all the last three major corporations I worked for, these great big and complex companies, did have a lot of legacy. So the balance of sort of innovative and it's sometimes radical change in respect to legacy is a common thread. And more than likely, I guess, unless you're at a startup or a relatively very new company, but I think the same dynamics could apply, is that balance between knowing when and where to you know, enact quite radical change, which is really what's needed today in supply chains, and doing it in a way that respects the legacy and I don't know a better word for that, but legacy of longer term team members, employees, what the company's built on, these type of things. I think that was common in my last three roles. And then the other thing that was common is the lack of common problems. Maybe at a high level, the problems are similar, but at a more discrete level, every organization has problems to solve. And that's why you go there. And they can be a little bit differently. So my guidance would be is do as much research as you can and connect with a broader, you know, if you're coming on a new leadership team, let's say, don't just connect with the new leadership team. If possible, connect with the old one too. And, you know, they're all data points. And as professionals, we'll pick and choose which data points we want to incorporate into sort of our thesis of our company. So
I love it. That's great advice. Connect with old and new. Love it. Where do you get your inspiration from, John? Any books, podcasts, blogs?
Yeah, well, it's not exactly blogs or social media. I partake in all social media. I know you're trying to help me with how I should do more of that now, but
I'm here to push you out of your comfort zone.
You can push me out of my comfort zone on that, but you did say, are you a little bit old school? And I didn't like that. I don't think I am. I sometimes maybe old school on my approach. I would say that's probably good negative feedback, but I think that at times you have to utilize social media, but it can be dangerous, and we should be thoughtful about how we apply that. But to try to answer your question on where I get my inspiration from, I do get a good amount from sports. We had talked a bit through that. I get it from what I would call a little bit disparate worldviews through sort of history. So I like to read about sort of ancient history. I'm a big fan of different Asian histories, that kind of thing. So how I apply that long-term is really helpful to me. And then the biggest thing is my family and is my son and is, believe this or not, but the dynamics, I'm coaching his Little League baseball team. In the dynamics of coaching both the children, but more difficult at times is the other coaches and the parents. Those dynamics in how someone like an 11-year-old can process and achieve, especially in my son's situation, it's very unique, gives me all the inspiration that I really need. And it lets me, at the end of the day, it lets me know why I worked so hard and why I did what I did. So
I love that. Where can everyone find you? Where can our listeners find you, John?
LinkedIn, my contact information is there. Googling usually works. So, and then my email is on LinkedIn and I will respond to it sometimes a little bit late now that I'm at a place in my career where I'm doing my own work. Sometimes I kind of live on my own schedule, but if there is ever a problem or an emergency, I definitely will respond. And I've been told that I'm pretty good at kind of sort of delineating between what's maybe important and what's maybe not so important. So hopefully that's one of my skills.
I love it. So find Mr. John Bauer on LinkedIn. And thank you so much for all of the value you shared today. It's been a pleasure having you. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you. I didn't know exactly what to expect, but it certainly has exceeded that. And it's really been fun to hopefully somebody will learn. If they can learn one small thing from my sort of story, I would be really honored by that.
Yeah, of course they will, John. I'm sure they'll learn more than just one thing. For all of you listeners, if you want more information on resume help, LinkedIn, go to payraiseandpromotion.com. If you're a hiring leader struggling to find talent, you can go to talentq.net and find out more about our recruiting services. Until next time, cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We are thrilled to have made a worldwide impact with listeners in 9 different countries. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to subscribe to Careers in Cocktails on YouTube and drop us a review on your favorite podcast app. If you're looking to update your resume or you're stuck in your career, I'm designated by LinkedIn as the top resume writer and career coach expert. I even created a resume and e-learning course to help you if you want to do your own resume. It's super simple and extremely affordable. Go to careersandcocktails.com to learn more. I also wrote a book called I Hate Mondays for all of you job seekers who hate your jobs and want to love your Mondays. You can go there for the same information. And of course, I am up to so much valuable information sharing that for you hiring leaders, if you want to find the secrets to finding the best talent, I have a hiring guide at careersandcocktails.com as well. I am here to share information and help people love what they do. Until next time, cheers.